This is the Screaming Pods Network on ScreamingPods.com.
And now, on with the program.
Welcome to The Pilot Project, the show where we reach into Al Capone's vault and dig up the corpse of some TV show that was buried for good reason. And today we're here to talk about the classic 1990
Put that in
pilot,
quotes.
Heavy in quotes, Cop Rock. This show had 11 episodes and we're here to talk about it today. We should note that if you want to watch the first episode of Cop Rock before you listen to us, look at the show notes for links to watch or go to pilotprojectpod.com and we've embedded the video there. I am joined by today the Balky to my cousin Larry. That would be my old partner, Dustin. You may remember us from such shows as Brew Bloods, maybe Break Room back in the day. You may remember me from such shows as Bionicast or Division G or maybe Pop Syndicate or maybe Media Sharks or maybe Zentertainment.
Was Pop Syndicate a show?
It was a website that I wrote things
for. Well, we were on there too. So, but remember both of us from that.
And
maybe Media Sharks. We were both on that too.
And most importantly, we're joined by the former editor in chief, that is the cousin Oliver of the show. That would be Stefan Mike.
Very confusingly named.
Yes. Pickled Embryo.
Howdy, guys. Thanks for having me on the show.
Welcome back to America. Let me be the first to welcome you back to America.
I don't feel welcomed after having watched this. I feel like you are spurning me in a rather passive aggressive manner.
This makes me want to move to Sweden.
Yes.
I, for one, am glad you came back just for this podcast.
I know. I did. I heard you were doing a new podcast yet again. I'm sure I'll be back in another 6 months for your next podcast.
Oh, yeah. For Brick Room 2.
We're tired of this. Yeah.
For Taste Buddies 2.0. I thought, well, I got to be here for your inaugural efforts. So
I appreciate it because the three of us have suffered quite intensely. This is probably more intense suffering than anybody has ever gone through.
So did you watch this all at one time? Because it took me two sittings to get through this whole thing.
I split it.
Yeah.
I got some breaking news for you here. I watched it twice.
Wow.
That's how dedicated
I
am to this project.
Painful you like it to be.
I watched it twice.
I just felt bad for you, actually.
I watched it once.
I feel sad to know you, actually. Yeah.
I watched it once for first impressions. I watched it a second time for analysis. Because I am a quality analyst.
Anyone can sing along the second time.
Yes, of course.
Yeah, I was able to get a pretty good read the first time. I don't feel like I really needed. And honestly, I think that if I watched it again, it wouldn't have helped. It would have like taken away a lot of the initial like surprise moments for me. Because a lot of the episode, I was just kind of like,
huh?
Can we cuss on this?
Yeah, I don't give a fuck what you do.
Okay, well, I mean, in your past, you've been
fucking
rather...
Fucking damn hell, just whatever the fuck you want.
Okay, well, I didn't know if you're trying to adhere to some sort of...
No.
All right. There were a lot of what-the-fuck moments.
Yes.
I was in this. I was just like, what the... And then it'd be like, what the fuck? Why is this... Like, why is half the cast of RoboCop in this freaking TV show?
That's a good question. What the fuck kind of sums up Cop Rock?
You're old enough to remember the original broadcast... Of when this
I remember it came on. I never watched it.
Because you were probably in middle school at that time?
When did this come out?
1990. So you were...
No, I was in...
you were in high school, probably.
I was junior in high school. I graduated in 91.
Man, so you're an old ass.
God, you're such an old bastard.
Yes,
Jesus Christ.
I know. But yeah, I remember like it coming out, but I didn't watch it. I know that it says there was 11 episodes, but did all 11 episodes air?
I don't think yes, they did. They did,
can't
actually.
Be right, really.
Yeah, all 11 episodes aired. Yeah,
honestly shocked that all 11 didn't get canceled after like three episodes.
I think we have to bow down and praise and clap for the Nielsen families that made sure the show never extended past 11 episodes.
Oh, my God.
It was god-awful.
How do you move on to in the second season?
And before we get, you know, start breaking this down, we should know that this was created by Stephen Bochco. So Stephen Bochco, who is the creator of NYPD Blue, Hill Street Blues, Doogie Howser. I mean, he had
some good stuff.
A lot of hits.
Yeah. I mean, and that was the whole idea was someone approached him and said, hey, let's do Hill Street Blues, the musical. And he said, I don't really think we can do that. But then the idea stuck in his mind and festered.
It fermented.
Right. Yeah. And then we got Cop Rock.
And then we got Cop Rock. And this is part of a 10-show deal he got in the 1990 to 91 season. So they said, Bochco, you successful motherfucker, give us 10 shows in one season, and well, this is came as a result.
And you know, it's kind of like the Adam Sandler deal on Netflix. You give somebody, you think they do something sometime that was decent, and then you give them like a big contract to do multiple things. Then you see what the results can be.
Yeah. I mean, it's pretty much like the Magnificent Seven or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You get any of these Netflix movies he's done that are all terrible.
Right.
You know, that's kind of what you get. So that's a big, big guarantee to give somebody.
It is. It's absurd in the number it is.
But I mean, at the time, he could do no wrong.
He could.
Like, he did,
right.
Like you said, Hill Street Blues, yeah. Doogie Howser. What was the other ones?
He did NYPD, NYPD Blue, which came later.
Yeah.
Which was, I think,
the sequel to NYPD.
Yeah. L.A. Law, which he also did.
Right.
So he could do no wrong.
I mean, he was a hit machine.
He was a hit maker.
Making, like, a lot of money for them.
I understand why they did it, but it's just...
But it's like giving, I don't know, Key and Peele or somebody that's popular now. Like, here's 14 slots on Netflix. Like, well, maybe that's a lot to give them, you know? Just, you know, you give us your next successful project and we'll go for it. But,
And really, I think the biggest problem I have with the show is it's so freaking earnest. It's like it is really just as dry and serious as can be.
Well, let's get into it because I think we have to go.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it deserves to go plot by plot and song by song.
All right.
I don't want to do it song by song, but we should at least mention each one.
Let's start with the intro.
Oh, let's start with the intro. So I will say, just off the top, this episode, this first episode, most shows, for those who aren't aware of television writing, generally have an A and B structure. You'll have your A plot, which is your main story, your B plot, which is a secondary story. Sometimes you get a C plot.
Yeah.
I feel like there was no A plot in this entire episode.
I couldn't figure out who I was supposed to care about.
Yes.
What was going on.
And good luck telling who was who in this show.
Exactly.
And that's not just because we're watching shitty YouTube quality and everybody looked like a potato.
It was just, like VHS transferred to...
It was worse than
that. As far as I could tell, the A characters were the policewoman that was...
Where's Vicky? I know that.
Vicky, right, that was kind of into her partner.
Yeah, Me Too Campo.
Right, who was trying to make sure that the... woman that was the junkie with the baby didn't go to jail.
Gilmore Girl.
The guy who...
And so that was the main plot of this episode, I think.
Wasn't it also the... Well, how about the cop who got shot? Was that not part of the A plot?
Ben Urich, that a B plot? From Daredevil, yes.
Okay, Bonnie the guy who Curtis poured Hall. The coffee down the other guy's throat or whatever? Okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
But was that really a... I don't know, that felt like a B story, maybe. I couldn't tell. I could not tell.
That's the problem, is there was no A story. They were all B or lesser stories. Yeah. I mean, let me just read off. I comprised a list of stories or of plots in this show.
You wasted too much ink on that printout.
Oh, I know. But a suspect who gets away shooting a cop and then a police abuse of the driver of the van. That's one. Screwing up a bus. That's another. A crack whore. A sleazy guy that gets convicted, a cop shooting an unarmed suspect, an affair, a good cop taking down a dirty cop, the crack whore selling her baby, spoiler alert, for $200, and an ugly guy. An ugly husband.
Okay, so I guess I missed that part. So she sold the baby at the end?
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Spoiler, let's get to that later because I have so much to say about that.
Yeah. Okay,
there's
good.
There's so much to say about this plot.
There's a lot to unpack here.
And I didn't see the show. It was a tale of legend at the time. I'd never seen this.
Yeah.
Boy, does it live up or does it?
I don't know.
Does it live up to the bad hype?
Let's start at the very beginning where have very stereotypical criminals.
It felt like an opening episode of Cops.
It did, yeah.
Because it
felt like a Sean Ryan. It felt like an episode of The Shield, and then it felt, I will say, with the cops driving their Chevrolet Celebrities down the street in Compton, going to a crack house drug bust. Very poorly lit. Mm-hmm. For all the money that these episodes cost, they could only afford a flashlight to light the entire scene.
I think it was meant to feel very cinema verite, handheld, running through everything, very disorienting kind of.
Let me just pick it up before we get too far into it. The reason I wanted to bring up the intro was, I feel like the intro is way too lively for the feel of the actual episode once you get into it.
I know. I was just like, the first 3 minutes, I was like, oh, what the hell is this? This is like, really? This is not what I was expecting at all.
Exactly. Right. I was like, okay, well, this is better than I thought.
Yeah.
Turns out it's not.
No.
But I thought for a popcorn fritter for a second, I thought, maybe this is better than I thought it would be. It is not.
No, because immediately they arrest the crackhead woman with her baby, and then we get to the
very first song.
First musical number, and you're just like, oh, this is this can't be right.
This is it.
This and, cannot be right.
And we should play for a few seconds that song right now. It's called We Got the Power. Let's just play a few seconds of that.
Hey, who are you talking to like that?
What's the matter with you, son? You were told to be quiet.
He calls you son. He's not your dad. He's just a dumb white cop, and you made him mad.
Punk with a badge, called up a man. Worked all his life for his 8 or 9 grand. Look real penny with a gun in his hand. You take it away, he's a chump. That's right, chump. Better do what they say. Bust your ass all night, bust your ass all day. You get shot through the head, they gonna haul you away. Put you in a garbage can. In the streets, we got the power. We got the power. We got the power. In the streets, we got the power. We got the power.
That is like, it is the stereotypical boiled down version of what white people thought rap was in the late to early 90s.
I'm trying to like, it reminds me of something, and I think I just figured out what it is. Is if you remember the Will Smith, DJ Jazzy Jeff, and Fresh Prince song where they had Freddy Krueger, and Freddy Krueger does
Nightmare
a little bit of
on my street,
right? Does a little bit of rap in that.
Yeah.
That's what that reminds me of.
It's that, but it's worse.
Like a really bad Beastie Boys song or something.
No,
I don't even know.
It's far worse. It's like it's like it's Saved by the Bell rapping.
Yeah. Right.
It is. My name is Randy, and I'm here to say.
Honestly, I got to, for the first thought was, my name is Barney Rubble, and I'm here to say I like Fruity Pebbles in a major way.
There you go. Yeah.
I'm like, exactly. That's what it's from.
Yes. So, and that's how they intro their musical element of the show.
Yeah.
That is the very first time.
But I do want to skip back a little bit. So this is a bust of a crack house in Compton at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Which this was before the LA riots, which would take place about 2 or 3 years later, 92-93. And it's funny because the central character of this bust is Luke's sister from Gilmore Girls. I don't know if you can tell from the beige blob that was on screen, but she has a very identifiable...
I didn't know if it was her or if it was the girl from So I Married an Axe Murderer, the sister. I couldn't tell which one it was.
Well,
but
the beige blob on screen was Luke's sister from Gilmore Girls.
Okay.
And it's so funny because she's supposed to be a crack addict, but she looks like she just stepped out of Jeans West freshly. We only know she's a crack addict because A, she's in a crack house and being busted by the police, and B, she has a hole torn in her jeans.
Wait. You saw her hair, though. It was clearly matted.
I couldn't really tell. Again, a beige blob.
It was heavily moussed.
All right. All right. Well, fair enough. She had a baby. There was a tear in her jeans.
Oh,
otherwise,
and she looked like she had never held a baby in her life.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I thought she's going to drop that kid at any second.
The whole baby storyline has a lot to be discussed. Exactly.
So then we get that song that we just heard, We Got the Power, which is probably one of the more famous songs from the first episode other than the jury song, the guilty song, which we'll hear later.
Yeah.
Sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I got to say also, I guess it doesn't come into play yet, but very quickly after, this is a very violent police force. I would never want to be arrested by these people.
But the interesting thing is, I thought this show came after the police riots. It came before.
Yeah.
So it was interesting. I will say that I have a little bit of respect for the show that it tried to depict the violence that I guess was more pervasive than we knew living in Podunk West Texas.
Bullshit Abilene,
Than we knew that existed.
Right.
That I guess it must have been more prevalent enough to make itself into a TV series. Because, yes, we got into police violence. But before we get to that even, I think we need to talk about the fucking disaster of a theme song.
What was that?
That is in this TV show.
My notes are like, oh my God, Randy Newman. It's a feature-length music video Randy Newman singing one of the worst songs I've ever heard.
And Randy Newman has done plenty of good
things. I think we need to at least do a sample of that.
Let's play that for a second. So
Randy Newman.
Why is it so damn peppy for the show?
I love L.A.
It's not.
We love it.
It's just the fact that, A, it's Randy Newman, which is your first sign of trouble. Randy Newman is, to me, an extreme power down. He is like
he's done a lot of good stuff, though.
No, he hasn't.
To go back through the whole list. Go through the list and pull it up.
How many suicides did he cause by the song Short People?
That was bad. Yeah.
Anybody who was 5'9 and under committed suicide because of that man's song about short people.
Yeah, but I'm saying he's done a lot of iconic themes over the years, too.
Iconic,
this is definitely not one of them.
Iconic, yes, maybe. Yeah. Good, no.
This is no Toy Story soundtrack, I'll give you that.
No. Exactly. Not even we're approaching that. I mean... Yeah. This trailer
I think Randy Newman, I think Toy Story. So
this trailer park boys looking motherfucker, he somehow consumes the entire intro. And if you haven't, for some bizarre reason, have not seen this, and you should go watch this, at least the intro, it's set up to where he's in the studio with singers, and all the actors from the show are variously entering the scene onto a soundstage.
Right.
While he's singing, and just look like they've never seen a better fucking thing in their lives. Oh my god, it's Randy fucking Newman with his three times bifocals singing a bullshit song at us.
Yeah,
oh my god.
It's one of the worst openings, opening songs and opening credits I've ever seen on any show ever.
It's terrible.
It does not fit with anything else that's happening in the show.
It felt like it came from
a completely different series.
It's really peppy and like upbeat and stuff. Yeah. And this show is about like police violence and cops getting killed and all this other shit. And then all of a sudden you have like Randy Newman busted out like, "Hey guys!"
it's
really weird.
And I would say
I love L.A. Like Stefan said, it's a direct ripoff of that song.
I mean, most of his songs are ripoffs of his own songs.
That's true.
Yeah. And I would say that. That's the problem with the songs. The most of the show is that every song lifts you out of the drama that you've just tried to get into. It's a giant pothole for the previous moments. So after we get through and somehow the exasperating beating that is the Randy Newman intro, so then we get to go on. We get back to the more real issues, and that one of which is gangsters being released due to prison overcrowding at the time. And there weren't enough prison, and they considered it at the time, they considered abuse, prison overcrowding.
Right. So they said, go ahead, doesn't matter what crime you committed, we'll go ahead and release you.
And so this then, like, segues, there's no song here, thankfully.
Yeah.
That then segues into our Me Too moment of the episode, in which Officer Vicky, which you mentioned previous, and Officer Campo is Me Tooing Vicky in the squad car as they're, I guess, patrolling L.A. They spot a suspect van because it's a van because who doesn't suspect?
I think it has like stolen plates or stolen or something
We'll go with that. And he's like, "Oh, I bet you like to make love when you're on top or whatever. You like to be in control because she's driving the car, so we can get a Me Too moment."
Wait, I thought that was that she was driving the car.
She was. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's like, he's
yeah.
He's
it's like, their,
oh, you
it's
like
their
to be in control, so I bet you like
it's
to
their
be on top
meet cute flirty moment, and you're kind of like. It seems like he's really just wanting to like raw dog her hard.
Oh,
She's like completely uninterested in him and whatsoever. Until later in the episode when you find out like, oh, she actually is interested in him. And I'm kind of like, wait.
Where did that come from?
I did not get that at all. I'm just like, what is this happening right now?
You get the sense that she is someone who is rebuffing his attempts constantly.
Yeah.
And being in the early 90s, she cannot rebuff his attempts because Clarence Thomas hasn't happened yet. And, you know, we're not in this modern culture.
It's,
so she
it's
has 90, to
so 90s, very early 90s.
Yeah. Close enough. But we do get into this scene where, after they go through their Me Too moments, they chase this van, this coach van. They are joined by another squad car.
Yeah.
This guy who has a giant hard-on erection for his shotgun.
Right.
He apparently is going to blow these two criminals away. Ironic moment, he gets blown away by the criminals.
Of course he does. I mean, that's just foreshadowing.
So the passenger in the van blows him away with his machine gun. And they capture the driver. The funny thing was, I thought that they blow the cop away, the shotgun erection cop, and then Vonnie Curtis Hall, Ben Urich from Daredevil, is sitting there holding him in the street. Not one fucking cop bothers to assist.
I know.
A. B. bothers to call 911.
I know, he's just sitting there like, somebody help me. And
somebody
everybody's like,
yeah. He's just crying in the middle of the street like,
fuck it.
He's just going to die.
He's so good. Yeah,
he's
fine.
Well, he's gone. There's nothing to do here.
Right.
Keep moving.
And then we get into another real scene of where, so our main... I guess cop antagonist of the show, Vincent LaRusso.
Our main B plot.
Yeah, our main B plot, our C plot. He decides to torture the driver.
No, wait, we can't. You're
what am I leaving?
You're going too far. Did you miss the prostate PSA moment?
Oh, yes.
Because I was just like, right. I was just like, because I mean, normally you're kind of like, oh, well, you never see characters go to the bathroom in the film,
right?
Or in a movie or something.
Yeah.
Not this TV series. No. This TV series takes you into the men's room.
That's true.
Two men peeing side by side and then having an open conversation about their prostate issues.
I forgot about that. Yeah.
The full weight bench in the restroom as well.
Yes.
In the restroom. It makes a lot of sense.
I mean, how can you forget the prostate PSA? I was just like, wow, I did not know we're going to be this educational in this TV show. I feel like I've really, really found something new here.
Held by, so Vicky Shelby's husband, as we find out later, who's a CSI, and Vonnie Curtis Hall, who is the partner, the guy that's crying in the street. He's lifting a good solid 25 pounds on his bench.
Yeah.
They're peeing in the background. And we get fake Bob Costas as the captain.
Yeah.
And they're having a discussion about
his official IMDb listing. Yeah. fake Bob Costas.
They're having a full discussion about their prostates. Yes. And which CSI Shelby husband says, "Oh, I noticed a hair on your lapel. It's longer than your hair. Doesn't appear to be yours. Must be another woman."
Yeah.
Like, how the fuck can you tell? You don't.
It's like, bitch, you don't know me. Like, what is this?
You don't want hairs up around.
Yeah.
It's like, it's gonna be any random hair. I mean, yes. what the hell?
Yeah, but no, I mean, fake Bob Costas doesn't dispute it.
So yeah.
I guess Schlub is right.
How close are we to "She Picked Me," the song?
Oh wait, we're almost there.
We're getting there.
Okay.
But we have to get to suspect torture first.
Yeah, you're right. This is the coffee scene, right?
So this introduces our primary antagonist cop, that is Vincent LaRusso. Yeah. Which, by the way, I guess that's the only Italian name that Stephen Bochco knows, because we also had Vinny and Doogie Howser prior. Vinny Satori something or another.
Yeah.
I guess that's his favorite Italian name.
It's got to be named Vinny or Vincent.
Maybe he has a brother or a friend. Sure. One character he always names Vincent or Vinny of some sort.
So they've got this driver in custody, and Vincent LaRusso here fully acknowledges that they are denying him his constitutional rights, and they torture him with not allowing him to use the bathroom. They pour water down his throat, and then Vonnie Curtis Hall pours a full cup of hot coffee down the guy's throat.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was just like, wait, was that coffee supposed to be hot? Because he just like takes it and just like acts like nothing. Like he's not getting scalded internally. Yeah.
But let's suppose for the moment it's hot coffee.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of police brutality going on in this.
Oh, there was
show.
A lot. And that was a really funny part. It's like, oh, we've been beating on you, so we can't take anything as you say.
Right.
But we're going to beat you until you tell us something that we need to know.
Right. We want to know about the cop killer.
Right.
Which, of course, I will acknowledge in TV copdom is... there's no bigger police erection than the cop killing.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
you've seen this
in The Shield. You've seen this in any number of cop shows. It's like a cop gets killed. That's our primary episode for the season.
Oh, yeah.
We've got our cop boners going.
Yep.
Which I guess I understand.
And this episode seems to like really just blow through plot like it does nothing.
Left and right.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, because they go through what would probably be half a season's worth of stories in like 20 minutes.
I mean, let me know if they continue that in the next 10, Mark, when you watch the whole series.
Yeah, I'm sure I'll be keeping notes on all of it. So the next scene then leads into... so we're back to Campo and Vicky. Campo, and he's driving her home in his stereotypical red Corvette.
Yep.
Of course. And he starts coming into her again. He's like, oh, you know, that shooting, the death of our fellow cop...
so to speak, yeah.
...gives me a raging fucking boner. Nothing makes you think about your feelings more than a dead cop. And let's fucking bone down, bitch. And she's like, no, I love my husband, and he loves me, and blah, blah, blah. And she's like, but I have feelings for you, too.
I know. That literally came out of left field. She's like, what are we going to do about this? She's like, I don't know yet.
We don't know.
Yeah, and then she gets out of the car, and you're kind of like, wait, what? What just happened here? This is like complete 180 from what we saw before.
But then you're like, all right, well, fair enough. She's probably, what, all of 25 at the time? You're like, all right, she's...
and then she goes into her house, and you meet her husband.
You're like, there's like a record scratch.
Yeah.
You hit a ditch, and you're like, what the fuck is going on here? Because this then leads into the scene. We get a call back to prostate CSI, comes back into our lives.
Mm-hmm.
He is now Schlub husband.
Right.
He
is easily 30 years older than
I was going to say. I feel like he's like 60.
No, he's not that old. He's probably in his late 40s.
And I know. He looks old as fuck, though.
He's one of those guys that has always looked old and just going like, oh, he died at the age of 76. You're like, what the shit? I thought he was 76 20 years ago.
He's a male form of Angela Lansbury. She was born old. He was born old.
Yeah.
He looks like a poor man's Peter Boyle.
Yeah.
Kind of, yeah.
And
then we get our, I guess, technically our second musical number, if you don't count the opening title.
I guess.
I don't count that.
What I'd like to point out at this point is this entire first season or first first episode.
It felt like a first season.
The entire first episode, none of the main characters sing any of the song. It's
right.
always secondary characters.
Yep.
And none of the songs actually push the plot forward.
No, yes, not at
they're
all.
They're always really? Just there's always just asides for some reason.
Right. They're singing about the moment. And right. I will say that this song from Schlub CSI is a primary example of that. So let's play that for a second.
And it's terrible.
Not much to talk to, and I know how I look. What I know about life comes out of a book. But of all of the people there are in the world, she chose me. Most of my life I've been on my own. Whatever I've done, I did it alone. But then she came along. Now I'm not alone, since she chose me.
So, yeah, the problem with the song is that it doesn't advance, and this is the problem with all the songs throughout the entire show, is that the song never advances the plot. Like a musical, typically in a Broadway musical, the song advances the plot. It is transitioning.
Well, I mean, look at Glee. I mean, Glee is kind of a great example of the songs were part of the story,
right.
And they weren't just some sort of weird aside from character. Like, this is literally the first time you're really getting an introduction to this character outside right. of the prostate PSA, which was really
random
and didn't have any context for anything else. So then the character shows up again, and he's just like, well, night, honey, you know, I got a little more work to do. Yeah. And then it turns to this whole song about how he knows, like, he married above himself. Like, she is way hotter and way out of his league.
Which I have to question, why did she marry this guy?
Yeah, I have no idea.
The poor man's Peter Boyle.
Like, the whole song is about how, like, ugly. I don't know why she loves me, but she does.
And it's like a full four fucking verses of this show.
Oh, yeah.
Because I thought it went a good 10 minutes. It turns out it only lasts 3 minutes.
Oh, it felt like it was forever.
This is the most painful song of the episode, really, in my opinion.
This is the point where I got to the show and I was like, I'm done for the.
I gotta take a break. Dude, me too. Actually, that was the same time I stopped.
That's actually the first time when I took a break and came back to it. Yeah.
I came back a week later.
Well, all right, I came back probably 30 minutes later, but yeah, and then we find out later on, spoiler alert, he is covering up for Dirty Cops.
Right,
but. Anyways, that was by far the worst song of this. Because it's not only that. It's like he's a schlub. He's a Quasimodo. It's repetitive.
Yeah.
It's like, on top of that, again, the lighting in the show,
it's just him with the spotlight on him, basically.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And then it gets darker and darker. You can only see half his face. And the good luck seeing the rest of him, he just looks like a giant potato at the end.
But you know what? The next part, actually, was the most confounding to me of the entire episode.
Oh, we get a transition from here. It goes from Sean Ryan-esque to what the fuck is going on right now?
Because like Ernie Hudson shows up,
yes, in a thankless role,
and like I'm like, first of all, like, why is, because this is like, he's just odd. Like, is the Ghostbusters not like paying him enough that he didn't like make enough off of that? He has to do this, and so he shows up. He was listed as a special guest or whatever, but then like,
but
then he goes over and he talks to the chief of police,
Ronnie Cox
from RoboCop,
Big Harry, yeah,
right, and that whole scene was just like, I don't understand what's happening right now,
and
because he gets up off the couch, he pulls out a six shooter.
He was almost blown away.
Putting on the six shooter was pretty crazy too.
Yeah.
And his whole description about that whole thing.
Yeah,
he's almost blown away by the chief of police who's taking a nap on the
couch. Yeah. What was that? Who sleeps with a six shooter, like,
yes.
a Magnum with 350,
a Dirty Harry style gun.
Yeah, sleep with that under their pillow and just like in their like. You're in, I assume, the middle of the police station.
Yes.
Are you worried that people are just, like, randomly jumping out of the shadows to attack you or something?
Right.
Because he just, like, whips that gun out, like, I'm about to, like...
Yeah.
Like, some sort of, like, Vietnam War...
flashback type
post-traumatic
thing,
stress syndrome or something. Yeah.
I hope that, you know, for Ernie Hudson's sake, I hope that he was promised, based on this pilot, that he would have a much bigger role later, because this is a truly thankless role. There's nothing for him here.
Again, let us know if he has a bigger role
later. Yeah.
Because he has a few moments here, and then he has, like, a background moment in the press conference scene.
Yeah.
And then that's it. He does no singing. He does a few, you need to think about your speech, chief. And then he almost gets blown away by the cop, by the chief.
Yeah,
and then there's this fucking moment.
Well,
where,
like when he puts on the gun belt, when the Ronnie Cox puts on the gun belt,
Bill Hickok paraphernalia.
Right, you're right.
And
there's
then,
much more powerful guns than this, but this one was wielded by Hickok. Like, okay.
And then he like has some sort of Hogan's Alley shootout moment.
He puts a button on his desk.
Yeah,
he opens a closet, and a cowboy dressed dummy slides out of his closet in his office, and he blows it away with his 2.6 shooter.
Right, and I'm just kind of like, wait, what?
This is an Ally McBeal moment.
Yeah.
I mean, it's so surreal and so, like...
It's so in contrast to the previous
scenes. The entire episode. It's, like, completely in contrast to anything else that happens in this episode. That it is so cartoony and over the top and just bizarre. Like, I still don't really even understand what was happening there, other than you need to introduce a character and it's the only footage they had, maybe
for comedic relief, I guess.
Yeah,
maybe. Yeah,
but it makes no sense. And no, again, nobody's concerned. He's opening fire in the middle of a police station,
right?
And nobody is concerned.
Yeah, and again, this show is played dead serious,
right?
So even if they're trying to inject humor, this just comes off as a crazy person is shooting things in his office.
Yes, a cowboy.
It's not like
the head of police is just shooting shit in his office.
It's not like the office where Dwight accidentally shoots the floor or something. You know, it's like this is just comes out of nowhere.
It's just perfectly acceptable to do.
Yeah,
this is the thing that you do there.
Right. This is a very serious show. They do that.
Opens fire on his dummies every day in this office. So then it smash cuts to the same chief, Ronnie Cox, and the mayor, name not given, I don't remember. They're having a press conference about the cop shooting, about the cop that was killed, shotgun erection guy. Vonnie Curtis Hall's partner was killed, so they're having that, in which they start complaining about prison overcrowding and the fact that judges are letting criminals go as a result.
And again, the logic of this show is crazy, because she promises to have a jail built in
12 months.
Now, mind you, we come to find out in the next episode that, she doesn't have any contractors picked to build this thing. She doesn't have any land or zoning to do this yet. She just wants this thing built in 12 months.
Right. Yeah.
And then that takes us to the third song of the episode?
Yeah. And there's five songs.
Taste for Everyone, right? Isn't that the song?
Yeah, I call it the bribery song, but let's get a little bit of taste for that here.
I want this jail. I want it fast.
Yes, ma'am.
And I'm hoping you're the man that can build it for me. Are you that man, Frank?
You bet. First of all, I'd like to let you know that I really do admire you so. And when it all is said and done, I can tell that you're the one.
You can tell that she's the one.
Now I want you all to understand that in this briefcase I have in my hand, just to prove our friendship has begun, I put a little taste for everyone.
There's a taste for everyone. There's a taste for everyone.
I was born in Delaware, behind the Dover Railway Station.
She was a pretty little girl.
I worked real hard and I got my education. Now I'm sitting on top of the world.
I will say that this is the closest thing we get, aside from the Guilty song, this is the closest thing we get to a Broadway song.
That's what I was going to say. It's the most Broadway-esque. They even have like the glowing cash in the suitcase and everything. Yeah. Like, it's completely ridiculous.
It does advance the plot a little bit. And then with the history of the mayor, we kind of get a feeling for what her character is through song. It's not just a repeat of information, which is what we've had through the previous two songs.
But my favorite
songs. But what I don't get here is, why is he bribing her? Like, why did he bring a, like, she obviously picked this guy to do right. this job.
Right.
Why did he show up with a suitcase full of cash and said, here, I'm paying off everyone in this room to make sure I can get this thing built fast, when actually she should be paying him off to make sure he cuts corners and get this shit done quick.
Because she was born in Delaware, which is very key.
Yeah. That's very true.
She was born in Delaware, where we can all incorporate for, like, I was like, taxes.
What the fuck does this have to do with anything?
Yeah. But, that really boggled me, that the crux of the song was like, oh, I'm bringing some cash for everyone so everyone gets a taste. But at the same time, I'm kind of like, but who is he? Who, there's no need to pay anyone off here.
Guy? Yeah, exactly.
He won the contract,
who
basically.
Is this, Statler brother missing one chromosome that comes to bribe her with a glowing pile of money. It makes no sense. And you're right. You know, I think we hit on it that Ronnie Cox's moment is the divisor between the Sean Ryan part of the show and the, for lack of a better term, the Glee part of the show, because Glee lived in, like, a heightened reality.
Yeah.
Like, we've got a tale of two shows here. And
see, this musical number was heightened reality. Yeah. The same thing with the jury number.
Right.
It was heightened reality. Yeah, whereas
glowing money.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it was much campier, much more Broadway, much more over the top.
Which, actually, that's what I would want out of this show.
Yeah.
I'd rather it be campy and Broadway. Like, why do they have to be Sean Ryan serious? I feel like this show had no idea what the hell it was supposed to be, and what it was trying to be. That was the whole problem with it.
For better or for worse, I will say, like, I didn't enjoy all of Glee, but I will say what worked for Glee, especially in the first seasons, was it was heightened reality, but with moments of pathos and moments of reality, but it lived, it embraced that heightened reality.
Have you guys seen My Crazy Ex-Girlfriend?
I've seen a few episodes, yes.
Right, so, I mean, in that show, it's played pretty straight, but it's also takes place in her mind, a lot of it. Right. So all the musical numbers are really just what she's imagining them to be,
okay.
which actually works within the context of the show and creates this heightened awareness. Whereas this show, it doesn't really know what it wants to be. It's like, it's like, oh, are we a biting commentary on the state of the police in L.A. at the time, or are we, a goofy kind of over-the-top show with wacky characters.
Right.
Yeah. It didn't know what it wanted to be, absolutely. And it had this, like, S.H.I.E.L.D. versus Ally McBeal tone to it, and it just made no sense.
Yep.
So the next plot point here was Gilmore Girl, Luke's sister, Liz, from Gilmore Girls. Gilmore Girl, she comes to the station. She still has her baby that she doesn't know how to hold and tow, and she wants to get tip money for turning in Tyrone, who was the cop killer from the very first part of the episode.
The generic criminal from the beginning,
yes. Generic criminal, right. So Bob Costas offers her $50 up front and says, if it's a good tip, we'll give you $50 more dollars. There's that. And then that kind of keeps going. And then,
they never offered her, like, a rehab situation.
They did.
Yeah.
Yeah. Vicky offered her. She's like, I can help you get into a rehab program. She rejects. She's like, I just need money. I'm gonna be on the street. You don't care about me. Her whole scene of, like, this is my scene of the moment is, you don't care about me. I'm living on the street. Me and my baby. Blah blah blah. This was after Vicky offered her a rehab program.
Well, I mean, but the rehab. But it wasn't really like, it wasn't stressed in a way that she would really be open to it. It was really just more of a throwaway kind of thing. Yeah. It's like, look, we could put you in a shelter with, you know, to take care of your baby. You don't have to be on the street. I mean, honestly, at this point, she's a really bad cop.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, she's horrible. Oh, the fact that she let her go out with that baby, at some point she's got to go, you know what? You're a horrible mother. Yeah. You do not deserve to have this baby.
Well,
we need to take you away from this baby for the baby's sake.
And they don't. They never take it.
Well, but she's just like, oh, no, she needs to be with her baby. I'm like, no, you're a horrible, horrible person and a horrible, horrible police officer.
Yes. Right.
They're all terrible. They're all god-awful. So then we go to plot 836, and that is LaRusso is now in trial, I guess, for somebody else he busted before.
Right.
And he's wearing a cartoon Looney Tunes-style sling on his arm, which is obviously fake.
Yeah.
And they bring up in the trial his abuse of power that I guess he opened fire on the suspect in question in the trial. I didn't entirely understand what was going on.
Yeah.
Something about he opened fire early. Without declaration that he was police.
Yeah. To me, the whole tough lawyer scene and all that stuff was really failed. Like,
which we get the high school principal from Buffy the Vampire Slayer with a bad toupee. Right.
Yeah, like, they're trying to take it back to the beginning of the show until it went kind of surreal in the middle there. And then it's kind of like, okay, well, now we're going to get, like, really tough talk about real street violence and cop interaction with people. And all, like, you're kind of losing the ability to have that kind of message when you go from being really serious to being really silly to going back to being really serious.
And I think this show is clearly indicated. It has no idea how law works.
Oh, yeah.
How court system works.
No idea.
What police are, even.
It does not know anything.
And I guarantee the actor that played LaRusso thought, this is going to be my moment.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to rant about Vietnam and how L.A. has become Vietnam.
Yeah.
And how these streets are like a battle zone.
That whole scene was so
this
silly.
This is my moment. It's going to get me a fucking Emmy.
Yep.
Like, I thought that was going to be his singing moment. I thought, oh, he's about to bust into some song, and that would make perfect sense.
Yeah, it would make
for sense. The show, but no.
Heightened emotion? Yeah. You seem to think that heightened emotion leading in a song makes sense in a heightened reality state? You're wrong.
No. Instead, we get the verdict song.
Yeah, I was going to say, save it for the verdict. Yeah.
But don't forget that we got a brief intermission with Gilmore Girl coming back and getting... Vicky will not give her $50 because her tip on Tyrone did not turn out.
Mm-hmm.
And when she storms off and is like, I'm done with you, cops...
I may have slightly fast-forwarded through that part.
Okay, well, then you missed the foreshadowing, like, something dark is coming for Gilmore Girl. but we'll get that. But then, yes, we got the guilty song, which is, to me, the best song of the episode here.
He's guilty, Judge, he's guilty. You could see it in his eyes. He's gotta pay. He's guilty, Judge, he's guilty. We have seen through all his life. The time has come to put this boy away. Well,
I was abused as a child.
Son, the end is near.
I was confused in every way.
Now you got some hard times coming.
He didn't know right from wrong.
To you, my dear, I want to make it clear.
He's guilty.
I want to thank the jury.
He's guilty.
And I'd like to thank my wife. He's been a criminal all his life. What are you going
to
say?
Say, I think this is the best song of the entire show.
See, for me,
you were jamming along to it. I could tell you're like, oh yeah, some gospel music. I'm all down
with
this.
Nothing wrong with the random choir breaking out as the jury.
But see, for me, this is another problem with this. As you collect your papers, this is another problem with this whole opening episode. Is it has a lot of stereotypical bullshit in it. Like in the very beginning, we talked about the very stereotypical criminals and the very very stereotypical people in Compton and the very stereotypical lead criminal. So then you go to he's guilty, judge is guilty, and the fact that we have a black prosecutor and a black judge,
and
we automatically have to have a church choir be the theme of this song. It can't be anything different than that.
Well, it was
like I feel like this
91.
Thing is. I know.
I'm
well, it was 90
make,
actually.
90.
But,
I'm trying to make excuses, but
I know. But I'm just saying there's a lot of stereotypical bullshit in this whole episode,
course,
which is kind
of
it's kind
of
funny to look back on retrospectively. 18
less.
Years later,
guys, I would just like to point out it was at
or
this point.
28 years later,
it was at this point I noticed that there was another TV show called Malloy, starring Mian Bialik and Jennifer Aniston, and I watched that.
Oh God!
And it was I look forward to your coverage of of that failed pilot because. Wow. holy shit.
All right. Well, that's a list.
Yeah.
So that was the best thing about this episode.
Yeah.
What's going to another show called Malloy?
I don't think any of these songs are good. That's my point. Like, I don't even know if I can pick out a good one.
If you have to say there's a good one, this one was written by Louis Smith. Anyways, a former lead singer of The Temptations. So I would say this one at least has some musical cred to it, and it actually... If you have to pick a song, I think this has to be the best one.
I don't know, man. It's tough
for
me.
Come on, don't tell me you're going to pick the bribery song over this.
I like it as much. I think they're both suck.
Yeah, it's really like a real Sophie's choice there. It's like...
exactly.
Do I have to pick one?
Yeah. And now, the ending song we'll get to in the first song, maybe worse. I think these two are the better choices, but
yeah. It's like,
very
marginal. You want pestilence or cholera? I mean, really...
exactly. Right.
Well, then we get into the final... few moments of the show where we get LaRusso again, so he's back on the scene, and he's back on the gangster scene, I should say.
Yep.
And they finally got a lead on Tyrone Weeks, the cop killer from the beginning of the episode. They've got him trapped in a house, and the cops who were apparently assigned to watch this guy. I guess he was trying to leave the house, and they decided, we're going to capture him and keep him in the house. So they went in there without a warrant. They busted him. They searched his house, illegal search and seizure.
But he is their prime suspect, right?
He is.
And they did see him leave the house. They chased him back into the house.
Yeah.
So at that point, do you really need a search warrant? Because if you've identified yourself as a police and you're chasing after a suspect and they flee.
No, you don't.
You don't need a search warrant for that.
Did they identify themselves? I don't know. I don't know.
Well,
I'm not going to watch this again.
I don't think they just like started chasing after some random guy. And he's like, oh, fuck, Whitey's.
But see, that's the impression they get is that he was leaving his house and they decided, we're going to chase after you and put you back in your house. That's the impression
No. What they said was, we saw him leaving the house. We went after him. He saw us. He ran back in his house.
Right. Stefan's got that right, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It wasn't like they caught him and then locked him into the house.
Mark,
they,
if you want to watch it a third time, you figure that out.
Beyond that, then they conduct a search and seizure of his house, which they don't have a warrant for.
But again, do you need to have a warrant at that point because you've chased a known criminal that is under suspicion into the house? Again, this is where I'm wondering: does the show understand law and how it works?
We cannot count on Cop Rock's interpretation.
Or do they just come up with some bullshit to tell us? Because it's my understanding, like, if the police have a suspect and they identify themselves as the police and they chase that person, then they have the right, if that person goes into a house, to follow them into the house.
Right.
And therefore, the need to have a search warrant is now void because you have apprehended a suspect.
I don't know. If you have a thought on this, if you're a litigator, email us. How about that? Pilotprojectshow@gmail.com. We clearly have no idea.
Yeah.
Either way.
We're kind of got Cop Rock to tell us. That's a terrible premise.
We're relying on Cop Rock for our legal information.
Well, Cop Rock just decides to take the easy way out and just straight up murder.
Oh, right.
LaRusso straight up murders Tyrone.
Right. I thought at least he'll take the cuffs off the guy at first. No.
Yeah, I noted Cop Rock, corrupt angle, definitely no shield.
Yeah.
Because then Captain Bob Costas comes in.
Right.
And he talks to Schlubby CIA husband. And he says, I see recent cuff marks.
Yeah.
And Schlubby is like, no, those are at least 3 days old. He's like, and Bob Costas says, you should want to testify that to the record? He's like, absolutely.
Yeah.
He's like, so Schlubby is covering up to Bob Costas for the official record.
And fake Bob Costas. Let's not drag his name through the mud.
Yes, yeah. Fake taller Bob Costas is covering up for the record. Oh, I'm sorry, Schlubby is covering up for the record.
Right.
So, and then it takes a really dark turn at the end of the episode, and that Gilmore Girl.
Oh man, yeah.
So
we have a lot to say about that.
So from the end of Bob Costas confronting Schlubby at the end, we then do a glide over with the camera, a pan over to a bus stop at the edge of a train track.
The song I called "Close Your Eyes, Little Girl." I don't know if that's what it was called.
That song comes out of nowhere.
Yes.
It's completely unmotivated. I'm just like, what? What the hell is happening here?
Gilmore Girl is there to sell her baby for $200.
You say it came out of nowhere, but to me, the like feel and vibe of that song fit more of the Sean Ryan motif of the show.
I would agree.
Than those other ones did. Actually.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Yeah, so I kind of get that, but at the same time, one of my favorite notes is when the guy comes up to actually sell the baby or, you know, take the baby to the family,
the youth minister.
He notes the fact that it is a very nice family because they put a car seat in the car.
Yeah.
I was like, wow.
And I just
went above and beyond.
That's a high standard to live up to. I hope someday I can live up to that standard
myself.
I am not a crack whore, nor am I a parent.
I don't know about that.
I want to be a parent. But I will
you
say,
may be
like,
a crack whore.
Were I a parent, were I to have Spawn, I think I would, A, sell my child for more than $200.
Yeah.
A. B, I think I would rather sell myself for sexual favors. I would rather get finger blasted for $200 rather than sell my child into sexual slavery.
Right.
To the youth
minister. Well, we don't know that she's selling her child into sexual slavery.
You don't know that she's not.
That's an assertion that you made. Yes.
She's selling it to a guy next to a railroad track on a bus stop. It's probably sexual slavery.
Well, but you are right about the fact that she could turn to prostitution before she turned to
why couldn't she
selling her child. Babies? Yeah,
and selling her child for $200 seems like a really good deal on the people that are buying the baby.
Of course it is.
A generic white girl.
I mean, yeah. I think,
especially
I think
90.
White baby?
Yeah.
It's like at least $2,000 right there.
Oh, yeah.
There.
Exactly.
I mean, she's
selling it cheap.
I feel like five figs minimum you could get.
I mean, again, you could not see your child and get finger blasted for $200.
We can ask Stefan if he puts his daughter up how much he gets.
When that happens, guys, I'll let you know. I'll let you know when I get
How much did you go for on the Swedish party?
Yeah.
Yeah, so, that whole ending scene was so...
It was dark.
It was dark, and yeah, after having kind of like... And again, like the bribery song sucks, but that was a much lighter moment. I mean, we had like a glowing case of cash and all this stuff, and then you go completely dark with this girl.
Right,
this
and then when the police car like just, I guess, randomly just pulls up behind her and then passes her by, I thought, oh, well, the police are coming to arrest her because she's turning herself in for something, right? No, it's just a weird coincidence. Yeah. There's a cop with his lights on just driving by.
I think they were just filming the scene. The scene.
Honestly, that is what it felt like. It was like, oh, we're just filming the scene. Yeah. It's like, bonus, cop car.
Ruin everything.
It is Cop Rock, so here's an extra cop car.
It was the darkest closing moment of any TV show I think I've ever seen. For the pilot. Yeah, it's just like, what the hell?
I would say only The Shield topped it with the kids in sexual slavery in the closet.
That wasn't the pilot.
That was the pilot. No, they were tracking down that. Wasn't that the child molester in the beginning?
Was that the pilot? I thought that was later in the season.
I'm pretty sure that was the pilot.
I thought the pilot ended with Mackie shooting that guy in the eye.
Yeah, that happened too.
Okay.
But I'm saying most of the plot of the first episode, spoiler alert, is them tracking down that child molester.
You're right.
Stuck in the bottom of in the basement.
You're right. It's been a few years since.
For the tone of this,
the tone of this show. Yeah.
I mean, this was just kind of like. Wow, why would you ever come back for episode two? Because one, you're not particularly invested in her story because she's not a sympathetic character.
Right.
None of the other characters are particularly interesting.
She's like a B-3 plot anyway.
Yeah.
Why would you ever care for Gilmore Girl? It makes no sense.
No.
I mean, and so to end the first episode on her, giving her baby away, it's not like some sort of weird cliffhanger. You're like, oh my God, what's she going to do next? You're like... Oh, she's probably going to go kill herself next.
Yeah.
Right. That's literally what it felt like.
Or do more crack.
Or maybe
shot more Jean's West.
Right.
One of the three. So I will say, in summary about the show, this is a show that I think is obviously didn't know what it was.
Had no idea what it was.
Like, they had an idea. They didn't know how to execute it.
Yeah, this show was a hot mess. From the opening horrible rap to the final really downer.
Yeah.
Closing number.
It went like kind of parabola. Like it kind of got like kind of okay in the middle with the six shooter and then the bribery songs. It kind of a little light and then okay, we got to make it really dark.
Yeah,
where we kill a suspect and then have a crack horse seller baby for $200.
Yeah,
like God, what the fuck.
Hi, this is Paul McCartney.
Hi, this is Elton John.
This is Cyndi Lauper.
Hello, this is Rod Stewart.
And you're tuned into the Pilot Project.
Hey guys, it's Nate. Maybe you remember me from my old podcast, The Hobo Shack. I'm back. I've got a new show. It's called The Cult of Personality, and it's on Radio Diabolus. Every Friday night from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, I'll be playing music, doing some interviews, and some other random If you missed The Hobo Shack, this is the next best thing. Come listen on Radio Diabolus. That's radio-diabolus.eu. You can follow the show on Facebook at Cult of Personality. That's KVLT of Personality. Or you can shoot me an email at cultofpersonality@gmail.com. Come spend your Friday nights with me on Radio Diabolus in the Cult of Personality. I'm back. I hope you guys are too. And you ain't getting my best.
Interesting facts about the show, about why it got canceled, other than just being
terrible. I find it hard to believe there are any interesting facts about the show.
Well, there's a few. Again, Stephen Bochco, hit maker at the time, which we mentioned.
Yeah.
So, for the time, the show had an average audience of 9 million, which today would be fucking bananas.
Right, that'd be a huge hit show right now.
Yeah. Then, it would have got like 5 seasons
then
nowadays.
It was nothing. Yeah. They needed, at the time, based on the cost, they needed 12 million just to break even
Oof.
On that show. And it's like, again, what the fuck were you lighting the show with? Just a tiny pin
flash? You know, I think most of the money went to extras because there were so many people packed into like every shot.
Yeah.
Like it felt really claustrophobic in that way. Like you really had to like push through to get from one moment to the next.
I heard. I think most Bernie Hudson people made a shitload of money.
Oh God! It's actually his salary.
Right.
So the cost of the show was $1.2 to $1.4 million per episode. Keep in mind, in today's dollars, that is $2.3 to $2.5 million adjusted for inflation per episode.
That's like Friends numbers. Yep. And like
with a not hit maker.
Right.
Yeah, without Friends viewers.
Like, where did the, like? Not just say that. I really wonder where did the money go, because it certainly didn't go to the writing. It didn't. It couldn't. I mean, there was a large cast, but it wasn't that big. But
they weren't. Most of them were not knowns.
Right.
Fox was arguably and Ernie Hudson were the most known people in the.
They go to the
cast.
Music.
And the other guy from RoboCop that was the one that was hit with the nuclear sludge. They got.
I know you're talking about the movie. I don't remember what he looked like in the show. I don't remember.
Okay.
I don't remember which actor that was. So, as you mentioned, Bochco was approached by a Broadway producer in the early 80s to turn Hill Street into a musical, but he didn't think it would work, so apparently that sat with him, and it became Cop Rock.
And it turned out it did not work.
It did not work.
He had a good first impression.
Yeah, yeah.
He got a 10-series deal from NBC in 87. This is one of the ones that stuck. They held cattle call auditions in Lincoln Center. Most of the people who showed up were Broadway people. No surprise.
Did they use any of those people? Because apparently...
Yeah, most of the people they used were Broadway people.
Really? They should have really used them for their singing abilities because they gave them zero opportunity to perform.
Well, that's one of the interesting things is that all the musical recordings, they were not recorded in studio. They were
recorded live.
They were all recorded live.
Yeah.
So apparently the situation was they would record them on the scene, and they would turn the monitors that you would normally hear yourself playing back through. They would turn them down so low so they wouldn't bleed over into the tape recordings that none of the actors could hear what they were singing. So they couldn't hear. So you'll hear, especially during the bribery song, is that they're off pitch the entire time. The Shelby Husband song, he's off pitch most of the time because he can't hear what he's singing. Because they don't go, like Glee, it's obvious they go back in the studio and they re-record it.
Right, which is what they should do.
Yes.
There's absolutely no reason to do live recording on the spot. Yes. Like, why would you think that was a good idea?
Yes, yeah. It makes no sense. Jeffrey Tambor, hashtag me too, and Jan Krakowski both auditioned for the show and did not make the cast.
Jeffrey Tambor would have been the schlubby husband.
Oh, sure. Yeah. No doubt.
For sure. A better schlubby husband, at least. One of the actors described Randy Newman as having made, quote, 5 beautiful songs for the pilot, and then he ran from the show. So I will give him credit at least for that, even though
he's gone. I heard he wasn't part of anything. I'm not even sure in the second episode the Randy Newman opening credits song thing is there. I think they completely replaced all of that. I'll never know because I won't watch any more of this.
That's your next song.
But yeah. That's what was my understanding when I listened to the Mike Post video. Well,
when you come back to the U.S. in 2 years, it'll be Cop Rock episode 2. That's what we'll do.
Well, I know that...
you guys are only pilots, so I'm safe there.
That's true.
Stephen Bochco in his interview mentioned that in one of his Emmy History Archives interviews, he mentioned that Randy, he had to convince everybody to do the show. Like, he believed in it, and nobody else did. Everybody called him an idiot, and Randy Newman specifically called him an idiot for doing the show, but he convinced him to do the show anyways.
Yeah.
And then we still got Randy Newman in the show, despite that fact.
Yeah, and Mike Post, who was the musical producer for almost all of Stephen Bochco's stuff, even told him it was a horrible idea.
Yeah.
He should not do this.
Randy Newman was correct.
Yes.
Randy Newman was correct.
Everyone was correct.
Despite his terrible contributions to the show. So apparently they had 5 writers in the show, like script writers, and then they had an additional 5 songwriters, and every one of them was responsible for story writing on the show. So they would try to craft the songs around the story writing. So that was 10 to 12 people, including
Steve Bochco, writing individual stories?
All trying to write the same story.
Mm. Oh, wow.
Every week. And they were trying to make 5 songs per week, which cannot sustain. I mean, that's the
well. I mean, you could if you had a really strong showrunner that understood how musicals work and what you're trying to accomplish, and how the songs play into the story instead of whatever the hell they did here, which is the opposite of that.
Well, that's the thing. Yeah. Is none of the songwriters apparently were Broadway songwriters. They were all people who had done like one of the guys had written the Dirty Dancing song. None of them were Broadway.
So they're songwriters, but they weren't
Broadway songwriters.
They didn't understand how to write a musical book as well as a story.
Yeah, advance the plot.
Why wouldn't you bring in Broadway writers? I'm sure they would do it.
You're going to hire Broadway people. You're right there in the heart of Broadway. Why not?
Well, to be fair, Broadway people don't understand gritty realism that this show is trying to go for. Yeah. So,
sure.
I mean,
they don't understand gritty things like the bribery song.
Yeah.
And we should note that this was not the only musical TV show made in 1990. There was another one that was a teen soap opera called Hull High that had a breakdancing rap group that served as the chorus, which we will be taking that on in future episodes for sure. And not only that, to put the cherry on top here, the show was nominated for 5 Emmys and won 2.
Oh my God.
Really?
How did it win anything?
It won for outstanding editing, and it won for outstanding achievement in music and lyrics.
Well, okay, to be fair, it was probably only going against itself.
Yeah, true.
At that time.
Yeah, that's fair. And then reviews of the show, Entertainment Weekly said, in good musicals, this is a quote, songs further the plot, in this show the songs do the opposite. Without the music, cop rock is a solid cop show. So do you think it's a solid cop show without the music?
No, it's not a solid cop show.
I would say
it's a C level.
It's a passable cop show without the music. Yeah. The music does not enhance the story in any way.
It definitely attracted. The St. Louis Dispatch called it, quote, a bomb of major proportions, which I think is quite fair.
I mean, I'm still really surprised it showed all 11 episodes. That just boggles my mind for some reason. I can't comprehend that this show went on for 11 weeks and people thought, this is what we should do.
Bochco said that, you know, the people that are fans of the show are really fans of the show. I'm like, okay. No one.
Yeah. Well, 9 million of them apparently.
And they all have Alzheimer's or in homes, like care homes.
Ugh. Yeah.
So last question for this first episode. Would you like to see a remake of Cop Rock? Do you think it can be redone properly? And would you like to see that? Because I, for one, would not.
I think the concept, like, because the idea of musicals has progressed so much these days, I think the idea of a musical cop-based TV show could probably done pretty well. Not like this. This was, like, the worst version of everything. It was, like, the worst version of a cop show, the worst version of a musical, the worst version of, like, I don't know, teen angst even. I mean, it was just, like, everything about it was just horrible. But I think there could be a good version of this that could be created by Ryan Murphy, probably.
That's exactly what I was going to say. Was Ryan Murphy, I mean, he's who did Glee, right? He did Glee.
Yeah.
Up until a point. I think he's kind of the David E. Kelly of our times. He does a good couple of seasons, and then he's like...
Oh, yeah. No, he'll crank out like 1-2 amazing seasons.
Yeah.
And then you'll get like another 5 seasons of just absolute garbage.
Is
like,
he Nip Tuck guy?
Like, yeah, Nip Tuck. Yes, I was right, Nip Tuck had like 2 amazing seasons, and then it was just like...
Oh, God.
Like, why aren't all of these people either dead or in jail?
He's the
this show
e.
makes
Kelly
no sense.
Yeah. He's the David E. Kelly.
David E. Kelly, well, David E. Kelly's still going. I mean...
I know, but I'm saying he will do 1-2 good seasons, and then it's just like everything goes off the rails. You're like, the hell is going on right now?
Which is bad for HBO because David A. Kelly is the one who's doing that big Nicole Kidman.
Big Little Lies?
Yeah, he's behind that. So
yeah, but I mean, Ryan did the American Horror Story.
Okay.
And he's also got a new TV show about...
Pose?
Yeah, drag queens in the 70s. Something like 80s.
70s
something like
and
that.
80s, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
New York club scene.
I've heard it's supposed to be really good.
The first two seasons of American Horror Story were pretty good.
Yeah. Again, typical with Ryan Murphy and David E. Kelly. Yeah. So, Dustin, would you want to see a remake of the show?
I kind of agree with Stefan. I think if you had the right people involved, the concept is not necessarily impossible to pull off.
Yeah.
But, again, you have to have somebody that understands... You can make it a little bit gritty, but you don't need to make it so dark. And then on top of that, you need to have songs that actually kind of advance the plot and have something to do with it. And it's not just an aside, like, I'm going to go sing over here and then go back to the main storyline. You know, I think if you combine that properly, you probably could have a decent... You could have a decent show. But do I want that? Not necessarily. But if it came out and somebody tried it right, I would probably try it out and watch it.
I think it's hard to pull off... ass song per episode. I think, you know, My Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, to its credit, I think they're doing a total of 3 seasons and then they're done.
No, they're doing one more season. They got four seasons. They're so done.
Anyways, it's done. Like, they set a finite ending to it. And to crank out 5 songs per episode, original songs.
You know what's good?
But even Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, they only do maybe 2, they do 2, maybe 3 at most.
Yeah.
And those shows always advance the plot in some way or tell a character story in somehow.
Rachel, what's her name, understands how that Broadway musicals are supposed to work.
A great example of that is Flight of the Conchords and why they didn't keep going, because it's hard to do that musical drama.
They couldn't sustain. They realized
That's why they had an amazing first season and an okay second season.
Yeah, and then they realized that and stopped.
In the last episode, you're like,
I'm glad they stopped, because the third would not have been good. Yeah. But, it's exactly right. That's a lot to do, man. I mean, it's hard to write just a regular show, but to add songs that actually, and produce them properly and make them sound good and include that, I mean, that's tough.
And that was, to Glee's credit, it was they had no original songs. They had they entirely relied on covers and remixes of covers.
Which is easier. No.
Which is way easier.
Yeah.
Because you can rely on songs that are decades old to provide those emotional moments. And to go to my Craziest Girlfriend's credit, they are producing original songs, but they also put a finite date on it.
Yeah.
It was like, you're creating a finite
But they're also
song.
Doing a thematic songs a lot of times. So it's not, maybe they're not doing the exact version of a song, but they're doing like, oh, this is your Bob Fosse song. This is a Chicago moment. From this kind of musical, this is a, like 40s dance number, Freddie Rogers and the Stair kind of thing.
Makes sense, yeah.
I think a show like this has to live in a heightened reality full time.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You cannot be a gritty Shield style show.
Yeah.
Does not work.
No. I mean, can you imagine Vic Mackey singing?
Right.
I would love to imagine that. I would love for them to redo the Shield with more musical numbers. Walter Goggins just singing. I mean, that would be amazing.
The Pilot Project is produced by Mark Hudson and Dustin Taylor. We have new episodes every Friday. Email us at pilotprojectpod@gmail.com or find us on social channels as @pilotprojectpod. Links to subscribe to this show for free and links to the TV shows we watch can be found in this episode's show notes or on our website at pilotprojectpod.com.
Thank you for tuning into The Pilot Project.
I'm loving this show.
We hope you enjoyed the show. See you next episode.